Welcome to Inspiring People and Places, where we interview national leaders in the architectural, engineering, construction, and development industry in an effort to educate, innovate, and inspire industry professionals to disrupt the status quo, improve their project teams, and steward public and private investments more effectively. I'm your host, BJ Kramer, President and CEO of MCFA. Allow me to introduce today's guest. All right, Inspiring People Places, welcome back. Today's episode, we are back to interviews, and I couldn't be more thrilled. Today's guest is going to be, it's going to be a ride. Our guest goes by a number of labels: soldier, educator, author, nonprofit founder, veteran advocate, husband of one, father of five, and I think the thread that pulls them all together, we could go with the label leader. Mike Irwin, welcome to the show.
BJ, great to be here, man. Looking forward to the conversation.
Great to have you. As I was just thinking through how to tee you up, I'm like, man, the guy does so many things. Yeah. So let's start with, what is your current role in the professional life?
Yeah, so great question. It's one that often confuses people when they spend time talking to me, because I have lots of conversations with people about lots of different topics. You know, my primary professional mission right now is the executive director for Team Red, White, and Blue. You know, we are forging America's leading health and wellness community for veterans, you know, approaching 300,000 members. Our mission really is to help veterans as they take off, as they become veterans, you know, service members become veterans, to be as healthy as they possibly can, physically, mentally, emotionally, through the relationships, all those things. Yeah, but I'm still involved, you know, an advisor on the Positivity Project, which I co-founded with Jeff Bryan back in 2015. Chair of the board at Father Vincent Capodanno High School, which is a private independent Catholic high school here, you know, right outside Fort Bragg, Fort Liberty. And I teach the character and resilience and leadership seminar there every Wednesday. You know, I, as you mentioned, I've co-authored two books, Lead Yourself First and Leadership as a Relationship. And a lot of that is the framework of how I do leadership development work with professional athletes and high school students and businesses and nonprofit and military and government, like all different sectors that I work with. I kind of come back to those two big ideas when it comes to leadership. And then, yeah, really the most important parts of my life really is my faith, my family, and my farm, really. So lifelong cradle Catholic, that's certainly informed a lot of how I live my life. As you mentioned, married with five kids, age 4 to 13, and we live on 32 acres. And we are very novice homesteaders, but basically learned how over the past 4 years, having no background, how to do everything from garden to, we have got a couple dairy cows, beef cows, pigs, goats, chickens, turkeys, ducks. You know, we've got like a lot of things, only a little bit of all those things. So we're not very good at any of them, but it's been quite the journey, you know, that ties together our faith and our family into how we live our lives. And so that is sort of the foundation of my life. And then everything else professionally, you know, really is like the first and the second floors, but the most important stuff are those things.
I love it. And I love how you described it. First of all, the three F's that you hit. I watch just enough on Instagram to know that I'm probably not capable of farming and homesteading like you, yeah. But I do appreciate all of the lessons that you share with us on that.
Yeah, you could do it. It's just a question of, you know, bandwidth and a commitment. I came into it during COVID, right? So there was no travel. So I, you know, was able to pour in a lot of energy and effort while I was not traveling and while I had a lot of time on my hands to read and get smarter and watch YouTube videos. But anybody can do it. It's a question of, you know, do you think the juice is worth the squeeze? And do you have enough of a growth mindset to know that you're going to take it on the chin pretty much every day for the first couple of years? And you do that because you've been through West Point. So
it's a great way to keep you humble. Like, there's no choice but to be disciplined to what the farm is calling you to do in any moment, right?
We joke about it, like the animals don't care if it's raining or if it's hot or if it's early or if it's late, like things just have to get done. And there's a beauty to that, much like, you know, the experience at West Point, right? Like, you've got things that need to get done, and the consequence of not doing them is way higher than the discipline to actually do them, right? So if you were to sleep in and miss formation, like, yeah, it might be not fun to wake up and be super tired and to get dressed and go down the formation at 6:30, but it's way better than missing formation and getting in trouble. You know, same things when it comes to the animals. You might not want to wake up or go feed them or milk the cows in the rain, but if you don't, they get mastitis, and then the problem is magnified and it's a lot bigger. So I love kind of like the pressure of the farm Because in many ways, it does bring me back to West Point. And it's like, you've got to do the things. And yep. whether you like to or not, whether you feel like it or not, doesn't matter. You've got to do it. And I think it's really allegorical for life. And it's really helpful, no matter what hat I'm wearing in my life, to sort of go back to that mentality of like, nope, this needs to get done, whether or not I feel like doing it or not.
Do hard things.
Yes, sir.
I love it. So I'm going to do my best to not ask you all these personally interested questions. And there's overlap between the personal and professional from my perspective and for our audience. So the two key ones are, a lot of our listeners are trying to become better leaders. We're mm-hmm. trying to build leaders in the organizations. Certainly a ton of veterans, and one of our missions at MCFA is to help with the veteran transition by giving meaningful work that has, you know, a mission. In the construction industry, there's always a mission in front of you. Yep. And I think a lot of our veterans lose sight of that when they leave the military, take the uniform off, you get into a transactional world where it's very corporate and it feels like you're trading time for money at the core of what you're doing instead of really mm-hmm. being focused on the mission. So I want to spend a lot of time on your experience around leadership development. And then we'll get into the veteran stuff. I'm sure we'll tease some other things out while we go. But I got to start with, you went to grad school for positive psychology. How did that come about?
So it started off with, you know, I was an econ major at West Point. And so I wanted to go back and teach economics. That just made sense to me. And then I applied to go back there and teach. And they essentially said, you know, no room at the end. Sorry, buddy. You know, like, your GMAT scores are not high enough. And while you've done some great things out there in the military, because I deployed 3 times, I was an intelligence officer in 1st Cavalry Division and 3rd Special Forces Group. And they certainly look at that and take that into consideration. But ultimately, like, West Point views, like, your standardized test scores is a big part of how good you're going to be in grad school and then how good of a teacher you're going to be when you come back there. And so I met with a woman named Major Dina Brager, and she was over in the Behavioral Sciences and Leadership Department. And she said, hey, I just met this guy, Dr. Chris Peterson. He came to West Point, you know, a few weeks ago, and he's a professor, a tenured professor at the University of Michigan. And I think that you would really like to meet this guy, understand what he does. So yeah, so long story short is my classmate, my brother-in-law, John Algor, had just gotten into Michigan business and law school as he was transitioning off of active duty and 2 combat rotations to Iraq. And I said, God, that'd be interesting. Like, maybe God's pulling me in this direction. Like, you know, I'm going to have family. If I went there, I would have family in Ann Arbor. I had never been to Ann Arbor. I had never even been to Michigan, you know? And so went there, made a quick trip before my deployment, because then I deployed just before I started grad school, January to July of 09. And I got in while I was, you know, overseas, deployed to Kandahar, Afghanistan. Anyways, bottom line is, started to study positive psychology under like the godfather of it, the guy who had done the academic research, the leading in volume of research into what character is, into what positive psychology is. And so what an incredible opportunity, you know, in your journey to be able to spend time so close in proximity to, you know, one of the founders of the disciplines and of the fields. Mm-hmm. And it really fundamentally changed my life, because a lot of what underpins positive psychology is the role of character, the role of relationships, the role of how we look out for other people. And that certainly is something we talk about as being a servant leader in the military. It's also very much part of, you know, my faith. And so you start to see these common threads between positive psychology, which is like an agnostic look at human behavior and how to get more good behavior, more happy people. But then you also can see that through thread into servant leadership, into being a good Catholic. So I found all that very interesting, and it really did change my life. After those 3 deployments to Iraq or Afghanistan, I had a hard pause for 22 months in Ann Arbor. Then I went back and I taught leadership at West Point. But that 5-year window of time was so pivotal in my life, you know, for so many reasons. And it really started with, you know, leaning into positive psychology.
So I do want to go back, because I know you grew up in Syracuse. Talk to us a little bit about Syracuse upbringing through your West Point graduation.
Sure. So oldest of 4 kids, and I always wanted to be a doctor my whole life. And then at age 16, my mom came home one day, and she worked at Syracuse University in the telecommunications department. She said, "Did you ever thought of going to West Point?" And I said, "Well, like, I kind of know a little bit about it, but I don't know much about it." My cousin had went there back in 1987 when I was a little kid. I was 8 years old, and he lasted a semester. You know, this is before they had evening study period and all that. He failed out. He just never had any time to study. And so I knew a little bit about what it was, and I knew the be all you can be commercials that, you know, you know, were on all the time when I was a little kid in the Army.
They should bring those back, by the way.
Oh yeah. They're incredible. Right. Like I still remember them like 35 years later. And so I went down and made a visit and said, wow, this is incredible. Cause I could have went to Johns Hopkins, you know, and played baseball there and gone the doctor route. But had that happened, I would have been a senior when 9/11 happened. I probably would have dropped out, you know, to like either enlist or, you know, to go into the military somehow. So I was right where I needed to be as senior year at West Point when 9/11 took place. And I, you know, then, you know, went military intelligence because so much of the talk was around the failures of intelligence. But yeah, but going back to like the route from Syracuse, as the oldest of four kids, like I wanted to set the best example I could for my siblings. And, you know, the idea of going to Johns Hopkins or Georgetown to become a doctor felt like almost a little selfish because I had three siblings coming behind me, and my parents said, hey, we'll help pay for it. But I knew that if they did that, it would have put all kinds of stress on the system for my other siblings, you know?
Yeah.
And so for me, once I realized I could go to West Point, you know, at no cost, get this incredible degree, if I still really wanted to be a doctor, I could. It seemed eventually like a no-brainer to me by the end of my junior year. And so I was all in on becoming a cadet.
That's awesome. So let's just do a quick top of the waves on. You did a couple of deployments. So you graduated, you go to officer basic course, couple of deployments, grad school utilization assignment is back to West Point, and you're in, are you teaching PL 100 and PL 300?
100. Yep. So 100. I taught the freshmen, the plebes, the overview course. So a little bit of social psychology, personality psychology, neuropsychology. So it's not deep on anything, but it's giving them a bit of an overview. Taught that for 3 years.
So I think that, you know, just in as I explore the world and kind of lean back to my interest in leadership studies, so much comes back to PL 100 and behavior and understanding behavior. So talk to us about, because, you know, it's been, I don't know, 24 years since I took PL 100, but I don't remember my professor's name. I'm sure all of your students remember your name, but I do remember a lot of the content, and I remember loving the coursework and being like, wow, this is great. But not a lot of people get exposed to that. Talk to us about how that is foundational to the cadet experience and to the beginning first steps of cadet officership and learning leadership.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. It's really about having the framework and the knowledge and the lens to understand yourself and other people. You know, we're all so complicated. Even by age 18, when you show up at West Point or you're going out to college or whatever you're doing, like you've already had so much between your genetics and then all of your life experiences that have shaped and formed you into, you know, person X at this moment in time. And I think it's really daunting to try to understand, you know, who you are and why, for example, you are perhaps so quiet, or why me. I had the nickname Gabby when I was 5 years old, right? I still talk like I love talking, you know, all these years later. It was a bit of an insult back then. I look back at it now, I'm like, yeah, it was an insult, but like that's who I am. Like understanding why I'm an extrovert and I talk my ideas out and I like to talk and I talk fast, you know, so everyone's different. And how you come to understand the differences. Some people like conflict. Other people hate it so much they'll do anything to avoid conflict. And so we have all these personality differences. And we have all these ways that our brain works that we don't know, right? Until you start to have like exposure to the theories and the lenses and the understanding of human psychology, you know. And it's also like a better insight and lens into philosophy and theology, right? Like so, it all kind of eventually comes crashing together, but. To me, yeah, it's critical, you know, to know yourself. But then, as you just alluded to, BJ, though, that's only a part, you know, of the puzzle here. You know, a big part of it is how well do you understand other people? Because you don't go through life as a hermit. Very, very few people do anyways. There are some, right, who are either as big, you know, as recluse as they can be. But for the most part, like we go through life with other people. And how we understand other people is huge. And knowing that each and every one of them has different personality traits. They've got different backgrounds. They've got different opinions. And whether or not like you agree with them on certain things or your personality is similar or dissimilar to theirs, it doesn't really matter. Like in many places, especially in the Army, you have to work with those people. You can have someone who's very progressive and someone who's very conservative. Like at the end of the day, if you're in the same squad, like you got to figure out how you're doing the live fire, right? You got to figure out how-
Not just coexist, but collaborate.
Totally. Like you got to like, if you want to build, especially an elite organization, right? Or even just a good one. Like, yeah, you can't just coexist or even collaborate. You've got to thrive off of those differences.
Yeah.
You know, versus let it cause division or let it create us versus them thinking, you know, which rips apart a platoon, which rips apart a business, which rips apart, you know, a country or a family, you know? And so these things are all really important to have at least a framework and a baseline understanding of, which PL 100 helps to provide, you know, in that freshman year.
And what do you recall the most? Because I think at West Point, you've already narrowed down kind of your population to people that probably have shown and displayed leadership skills, but they're still the most junior leaders that you're interacting with. In any organization where you're trying to build a leadership mindset, what are the first steps you're taking? I mean, I know you're specifically in PL 100, we're talking about understanding yourself and understanding others. How would you implement that or take action in another organization?
Yeah, I mean, so this is a lot of what we talk about at the Positivity Project. You know, it's not just understanding why people are the way they are, introvert or extrovert, you know, conscientious or a mess and always disorganized, right? Like, but it's also having the language and the words to be able to describe yourself and describe other people. You know, to me, that's a big part of the power of positive psychology and specifically the 24 character strengths that sit at the foundation of that. You know, it gives you the words that you need to be able to say to someone else or to say to yourself to understand who you are or understand who someone else is. It is, I think, a relentless focus on other people. Obviously, if you're in a sales position in an organization, a lot of time you're thinking about your potential clients or people that you're trying to sell to. It's also very easy to get hyper-focused on ourselves, you know, and on how we're doing and how this benefits or hurts us, you know, and I think it's really important to know that this is part of like the complexity of life. You know, my favorite phrase these days is there's no answer key, right? There's no finish line. People change and situations change and therefore our understanding of them changes.
It's a dynamic world. So everybody listening, you know, that is why we constantly talk about leadership, because as much as AI may change how you do business, nobody's going to change the fact that leadership's required to navigate business or navigate complex situations. All right, so you're teaching PL 100. At some point between grad school or maybe at grad school, you found Team Red, White, and Blue. Is that correct?
Yes.
What was the moment or what was the driving force?
Yeah, so I started grad school in 2009. And so I was there for maybe a couple months and I was like already very much fish out of water. Shall I say? I was struggling, you know, with the sense of I had just spent the past 7 years either deploying or preparing to deploy, you know, in a very tight-knit military unit, you know, in Texas or North Carolina. And all of a sudden, I was kind of on my own. It was my wife and me, no kids at the time. My brother-in-law and my sister were there, you know, in Michigan. So we had some people that we knew, but for the most part, didn't really know that many people. And my goodness, was it challenging for me to go into this new environment. There's not a single active duty military base in the state,
Wow.
you know, and
that's
so Iraq. Yeah. I mean, and so, and yet they send they're the ninth highest state in terms of sending people into the military. So a lot of kids from Michigan go into the military, but they do not have a single, you know, active duty military base there. And so like we're surging in Afghanistan. I just come out of Afghanistan. So again, very much in a state where I did not really know the environment that I was in. So yeah, so that kind of set the psychological conditions for me to like be like, I got to do something. I've got to serve. I got to give back in some sort of way to contribute to either the mission over, you know, in Afghanistan or Iraq, or to the people who are being hurt and coming back home and trying to reintegrate. And that created that condition, you know, in 2010, very early in the year, January, February, to go to the Ann Arbor VA and say, hey, I've never started an organization before, but if I was to start a nonprofit, what is the biggest need that veterans have right now? Mm-hmm. And I talked to the social worker who managed about 100 veterans from Iraq or Afghanistan, you know, who were struggling. She said, honestly, like a lot of times veterans just need someone to talk to. They need someone to like get along with, right? And just have a conversation or a coffee or go to a ball game, right? And so the initial idea of Team Red, White, and Blue was actually to do running and triathlons and CrossFit and those kinds of things to raise money to then support veterans who were struggling. And that was the idea. That was like 1.0 of Team RDDB. For, you know, 2.5 years. And it was then that we went through a professional consulting engagement where they really challenged us to think through, okay, if you were to scale this, like what would it look like and how could you scale it? And by that time, it was very clear, like the quote unquote customer, the veteran community had spoken. They didn't necessarily want us to build another organization to help the veterans who struggle the most amongst us. They wanted us to build an organization that would be a membership-based organization that promoted physical activity. Because physical activity and going out on a run or going on a workout, especially with other people, had been so therapeutic. It had been life-changing, sometimes life-saving for these veterans. And they wanted to keep doing that and help other veterans to know that. And so that's really where we evolved right around as I was leaving grad school and at West Point to now become really a veteran health and wellness focused organization.
It's awesome. I have so many questions about the founding. Number one, probably, how did you come up with Team Red, White, and Blue? Because I think from a brand standpoint, yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, we first started out, ironically, you probably remember that movie from a long time ago, like we were going to be Team America. That was quickly shot down. But yeah, like I still to this day, I remember when I went to talk to the lawyer and accountant who was filing the paperwork, it was pretty interesting. And he's like, yeah, there's got to be someone that's already like registered this name, Team Red, White, and Blue. Like, I don't think that you're going to be able to get this one. And he came back later that day. Sure enough, like, I can't believe it, but no one has named, you know, an organization Team Red, White, and Blue. So you got it. And like at that moment there, it was like, wow. Like we knew like that, you know, maybe we had some momentum on our side that we never even realized, because in day one, when we started to form the organization, a name that most people thought for sure would already be taken had not been.
That's awesome. Inspiring People in Places is brought to you by MCFA. MCFA is a CVE verified service disabled veteran owned small business. At MCFA, our why is to inspire people in places through project leadership. We provide planning, strategy, program management, and construction management support services to a wide variety of public and private sector clients. All right. So you get off active duty right around as soon as you ended at West Point. Is that?
Yeah. So I taught at West Point 11 to 14. I did one final year at SOCOM, you know, to wrap up my commitment for going to grad school. And so I left active duty, transitioned to the reserves in the summer of 2015.
Okay. And when does Positivity Project come in?
So started in late 2015. So as I transitioned, you know, to North Carolina in May, June, July of 2015, started to do some leadership work, you know, in an organization called the Quiet Revolution, you know, working on helping
Susan
introverts.
Cain.
That's right. Susan Cain, helping introverts and extroverts to better understand one another, you know, and she had wanted to stand up a focus on developing, you know, leaders to have a deeper understanding about the power of introverts. And after a little while, you know, I think she just made the decision of like, yeah, you know what, like this is everyone knows it's a very heavy lift to build a company, to build an organization, you know, and I think that, you know, really at her core, she is an author, right?
Right.
She is very big introvert. And I don't think that, you know, after she got into it, realized that, that she did not necessarily want to build a company and go through all that. Essentially a training company. We were going to go out there and be a training company with, you know, NASA and Procter and Gamble and companies like that and organizations. Yeah, then I got to the point of like, okay, well, what's next? You know, and I've been posting on social media after. So a big piece of the story here, right, is that Dr. Chris Peterson died unexpectedly and suddenly of a heart attack in October of 2012. So I've been gone from the University of Michigan for about 15 months. He was actually supposed to come and speak the entire plebe class at West Point in the late October. He died of a heart attack 2 weeks prior to that. You know, and so I started leaning in, thinking about how to pay tribute to Chris because he had such a huge impact on my life. And that's where the idea of, I wonder if positive psychology and this application and this focus on character could have an impact other populations on other groups of people, right? And that really is what began, you know, the seeds were planted to the Positivity Project. But as posting on social media, a couple of people that I knew that I grew up with who are now principals and teachers, they saw these posts about character and the question was simple. Can this stuff be taught to kids? You know? And I said, well, I don't know. You're the principal or you're the teacher. Like, you know, my oldest kid is 7 years old at the time. So I don't know the answer to that question, but I'm willing to give it a shot. And my instinct tells me yes. And so, yeah, that's what we did. So we started with one school, providing some resources to them. You know, they worked to create some of those resources early on with us hand in hand. And, you know, within the first 3 months, they sat, you know, Jeff, Brian and I down and said, I don't know what y'all are doing right now, but you should probably quit it and go all in on this because this is really powerful and this is having a huge impact on kids. And we think it can have a huge impact on thousands upon thousands of more kids. That's what we did, you know? And so it went from one school to 33 to 188 to 525 within really 3.5 years.
Wow.
And it just took off, you know, kind of the catch lightning in a bottle kind of thing.
Yeah.
Wow, there's a huge demand and need. But it wasn't just the focus on character, VJ. At the end of the day, it goes back to what we talked about 10 minutes ago. Right? It was, you know, the focus on other people. You know, our hashtag was Other People Matter. You know, Chris Peterson, when he would travel around the world giving lectures and giving talks, like that's how he would summarize like all the research of positive psychology is that other people matter. Right. And so we brought with this strategy, not just a focus on understanding your own character, child A, B, C, D, and E, but understanding the character strengths of other people. Right.
Yeah.
And that will give you a better ability to understand and appreciate other people. Right. And if you do that, you now have a more fertile ground to build strong, positive relationships in your life. Right.
That's
and
awesome.
So that focus on character, but then focusing on understanding other people and building relationships, that 1-2 punch, you know, is mighty powerful. And it's powerful for kids learning it through the positivity product. And it's powerful for leaders in the world today as they go through the ups and the downs of COVID and, you know, the turbulence of AI and all things in the future.
It's awesome. Quick shout out, Jeff Bryan, Army lacrosse player, class 2004. My college roommate, Army lacrosse right now is number one in the nation. So we got to give Jeff his due there. I want to talk about maybe a one or two leadership lessons that have served you because you've been in the military. You continue to serve in the reserves. You have founded two nonprofits that both have essentially movements associated with them. You're teaching on leadership all over the place. Somebody asks you, what's the most important thing about leadership, or what is one very tactical leadership lesson you've learned? I know that the Other People Matter mindset sounds like the global umbrella, but talk to me tactically about somebody in our industry is on a project site and they're trying to just be a better leader. Where do they start?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the most successful thing to all of us, right, is improving our self-awareness of who we are, you know, and how we show up. Like everyone's flawed. Everyone's going to make mistakes. Everyone has quirks about them. I've never met anyone who's like just got no rough edges, you know? So I think it starts with a self-awareness, you know, and then of course the next lens, right? And that's lead yourself first. And then the next piece of it is leadership is a relationship and the idea of understanding other people. So that's like my starting place is BJ 1 and 2, understand yourself and focus there, start there, then prioritize and be able to understand other people. In other words, leading yourself first matters because it allows you to lead other people and to build relationships well. To me, that starts with a commitment to the process of self-improvement, primarily through books. You know, when you either listen to a book or you read a book, you commit hours of your month or of your quarter, hopefully not your year. Hopefully, you know, you're doing at least a book a quarter. You commit a big part of your mind and how it works to a big idea. Right. And, you know, there's just so many books out there. When I think about how I see the world, how profoundly they've been shaped by the books that I read. And, you know, you probably remember the famous speaker, Matthew Kelly, right? He's dynamic Catholic, but he's also like speaks to like secular audiences. Like, but this idea of, he talked about this 8 years ago. And I remember thinking he was maybe overdoing it a little bit, right? By really emphasizing the books you read shape and change your life. And it's like, are they really that important? And then I realize as I think about things, how I see the world now and how I make decisions, yes, the books that I choose to read or the podcasts that I listen to or the books that I listen to, they shape and they change your life, you know? And so you've got to be really strategic every time you say and you commit to reading or listening to that book, you know? And so to me, that's where it starts, you know, is choosing the right books. And whether that's James Clear's Atomic Habits, you know, because like you want to build better habits and healthier habits, right? Or whether it's that you want to understand the psychology of money, which I'm listening to right now, you know, whether it's you want to understand your faith and the history of the faith better, the Benedict option, you know, or the devil and Bella Dodd, like you read these and you listen to these books, they fundamentally shape the way you see things, right? And to a certain extent, like if you go whole hog and think, well, I can solve all my problems with Atomic Habits. No, you can't. Like these things are only pieces to a puzzle, right?
Yep.
And it really becomes this idea of like, what is the mosaic? What does the puzzle look like of the 50 most influential books, right? For me, as a guy, like the Catholic Catechism in a year with Father Mike, you know, the Bible in a year. If, you know, again, if you're a Christian, and you don't know the Bible, like I had it until a couple of years ago, that's really hard, right? But whether it's books tied to your faith, how to be a better parent, how to be a better leader. Like all these things to me are intertwined. And so I try to be really intentional about every single book I listen to. And I get lots of ideas from lots of people that give me, yeah, you should read this book. You should consider that book. You should listen to that. And like, I'm like, okay, like, but I need to dig deeper before I'm going to go committing 8 hours right. or 10 hours, you know, of my life, you know, to this big idea, making sure that it really is worth my time based upon where I'm at in this moment in time. So bottom line to your question is, I think it really starts with that commitment to self-improvement, choosing the right book in the starting place so that you know yourself better and then you understand others.
I love it. And that is an action that everybody can take right now. And we usually ask, what's your most recommended book? It sounds like you've got a lot. So if that's not an easy answer,
yeah,
what is the book you're reading right now?
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, like, it's got a very spiritual component and also just like life lessons component. My go-to answer is The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho.
Oh, I like it.
All right. Kind of a book I read every couple of years and I seem to forget a majority of the book, you know, every couple of years. So it seems like I'm reading it for the first time, like, you know, at least once you get into the details. So that book for me is like, it just gives you such a great mindset about like what seems like, you know, a dead end is never a dead end. Pursuing your personal legend, the whole world conspires with you, even though it doesn't seem like it, right? They're conspiring with you to make that happen. So I think that's a really powerful one. I think that I would say though, honestly, for me, in terms of my life right now, like by far, not even close, like the most important book I think for people to read, you know, if you're thinking about the future is The Fourth Turning. You know, there was one written in 1996 by Strauss and Howe. Strauss passed away. Neil Howe wrote an updated version that came out in 2023. It's phenomenal. It's all about understanding generations and understanding time is cyclical and how things come in cycles, right? And that to me is like a big umbrella that shapes and influences how I think about the macro picture of how to raise kids, how to prepare people for, you know, the future, right? And when you look at The Fourth Turning and all that, and you study, because it's really essentially it's a history book, right? It's a study of American history through the lens of time is not linear, time is not chaotic, but rather time is cyclical. And these patterns of time are somewhat predictable, just like we know that fall follows the summer. We know that winter follows fall, right? Like that seasons come and they don't always start at the same time. They don't have the same level of intensity or severity, but we know that inevitably winter follows the fall. You know, and
for
so
every season turn.
Exactly. So there's like, and so in that you can look at that and see that there's trends and there's things that happen, right? Within that. And so to me, that I would say, well, it's not explicitly tied to leadership, it's actually tied to like life, you know, and that's really the name of the next book that I'm working on, which is, you know, Leadership is Life. So, you know, and it's this idea of you go through life like whether or not you want to, whether or not you want positions of leadership, like, you know, life is leadership, you know? So
hit that one hard. I like it. If you could have dinner with three guests dead or alive, who would they be?
It's a really good question. You know, I would say crazy enough for me is I've had dinner with one of them, Father Mike Schmitz, really, who has come the modern day Fulton Sheen for the Catholic Church, yeah. His ability to translate the Bible and the catechism into, you know, a digestible and understanding is unparalleled probably throughout history, you know, at least in my opinion. You know, so he'd be my religious answer, you know, from a, you know, my answer is not Jocko or David Goggins, right? Or some of like the military cult heroes out there, you know, at all, right? You know, I'd say, again, another person who it's a tricky question because like some of these people, like I actually, like of all the people in the world, 8 billion people, I would have like dinner with like one of my friends who is a squadron commander, you know, over at the Tier 1 unit here, you know, at Fort Bragg, now Fort Liberty. And I've had dinner with him, you know, multiple times. But yeah, I think at the high level, there's people who often go to politicians, they go to sports, they go to, you know, famous people. So I would probably go to Denzel Washington. I find him like a fascinating philosopher. You know, he's obviously like a tremendous actor, but when you look at all the videos out there about him, I find him to be one of the most incredible modern day philosophers, you know? So yeah, I'd go with Father Mike Schmitz, Denzel Washington, and, you know, on the business side, you know, there's just so many people who've done such amazing things, you know, and built companies and, you know, and done all that. So it probably would be hard to not put Elon Musk on that list right now with like the things that he's involved in and the insight that he has. But you could find yourself replacing him, you know, with a Zuckerberg or, you know, someone who kind of Sergey at Google, right? Some of the people who are like at the absolute top of like the tech mountain, and yeah. understand how like things were going. Those would be my three I would go with.
I like it.
Get pressured.
Favorite quote?
Oh man, my favorite quote, certainly, you know, as a kid, you know, was from John Wooden, and that is that failing to prepare is preparing to fail. I actually printed it out and hung it in my closet. It was a kind of a reminder every day to myself. You know, it was this idea that you got to prepare, you got to prepare as best you possibly can, you know, to be successful in life. And that certainly was true. I'm not sure that it still is the most meaningful or the most powerful quote, you know, to me now, but that's my default that I go back to because it's, you know, stands out in my mind as being something that was really, really powerful.
Who inspires you?
Oh man, I'm one of these people who is I don't want to say easily inspired, but like I find inspiration, you know, in lots of places. I'm inspired by the person when I'm, you know, going like at Chick-fil-A and they got a big smile on their face and they're very polite and energetic, you know, making more than minimum wage. But certainly for me, like my wife, you know, my kids, like we're very different people. She really inspires me, holds my feet to the fire, like to be better. You know, to do better. Of course, that doesn't always feel good, but like, you know, that's a big one. And I'm certainly, you know, not one of these people who is easily inspired by like all the big names in the flash. Because I've met some high profile people who I don't really consider to be great human beings. Like they don't inspire me at all. Like really, I'm inspired by people who've got good character and who treat other people well, regardless of, you know, their circumstance. I mean, I would say no one inspires me better or more than someone who's facing tremendous adversity and the deck is stacked against them, right? Or when you study like the litany of like Catholic saints and like who are dying and did so like with a smile, did so like with joy, you know, like to be at that level, right? People who thrive like in their spiritual life, right? Versus those that are at the top of their game, you know, in music or in sports or in the military or business, like those people don't inspire me nearly as much as people who are staring down adversity and doing so well. So
yeah.
Not specific
Mother
names,
Teresa.
Like, totally. Like people like that. I mean, think about that. You know what I mean? Like that's the archetype of a person
agree.
That inspires me rather than specific names, which is, I think is what you were looking for, but.
That was a perfect answer. This is conversational. There's no right or wrong answer. No answer key, like you said.
Yes, that's right.
You are doing a ton of stuff. I have questions personally around how you balance your calendar, but maybe more so, what do you want your legacy to be around all of the work that you're doing?
Yeah, like it's something I think about a lot, right? This idea of legacy building. And, you know, we know that our legacy is really primarily shaped by, you know, the lives that we touch, you know, and especially the lives that we touch personally, the people who will show up at our funeral. You know, and so I think a lot about legacy, about who do I pour into, certainly starting with my family, but also like friends and other people. So I'm a little over time, I've softened on the idea of legacy around what I do at Team Red, White, and Blue or at the Positivity Project or at Father Capodanno High. Like those things are important to me, but ultimately I think that, you know, changing people's lives and knowing that that might mean like you only change it in a moment, like you work with one student who's trying to get into West Point, you know, and you help him or her get into West Point. You know, like, and then they go on their way and like, you might never even talk to them again, right? But they can't forget you because you played a critical role in their life. So that to me is one way to be a legacy builder, right? And then another one, of course, is through like the ongoing relationships over decades, you know, that happen. But I think those ways of building a legacy are more powerful and more important than through, you know, whatever role we play in organizations. I mean, again, I think we can do both, right? You can build your legacy through organizations because of the people that you touch, right? And because of the way that it changes. But I think increasingly I'm in the position or in the corner of, no, like I really am focusing on the impact that I make personally on individuals' lives through my mentorship or through my advice, right? And then again, that splinters off into two. One, the deep relationships that stay there forever, or that one deep, powerful, important conversation that gives the person who's doubting, should they go out on their own and build their business or not, that gives them the confidence to go do it. Right. Or, you know, gives them like that one piece of knowledge or insight to help them get over the hump or to get into, you know, their dream school or whatever it might be. And so you can build legacy, I think, in both of those ways.
Last question. What is your number one way for balancing and juggling all the balls you got going on?
So, you know, I think that a lot of people, first of all, a lot of people have a lot going on, right? The farm and five kids, like, you know, and the fact that we homeschool our kids as well, you know, until they go to Father Capodanno is certainly another layer of busy, you know, in my life. But ultimately, like the biggest thing I've done, I have architected my life post-military, because of course, when you're in the military, you can't do this because your time...
Go where the Army tells you to go whenever tell you to go there.
That's right. Like your time is not your time, right? And so with that reality, since I've left active duty almost 9 years ago, I've been able to create my life, not holistically and not without mistakes and not without troubles and struggles, you know, but around a way that I know maximizes my utility, maximizes my strengths, my personality, what I enjoy doing, what gives me energy. But at the end of the day, I use the analogy, BJ, of it's like preparing for a triathlon. You know, your swim, your bike, and your run all at the end of the day make you better in the other domain. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you're swimming, for all three of them, you need cardio strength, you need core strength, you need the mental strength to keep pushing through when you want to quit. And so getting better at swim, ironically, actually helps make your bike better. And getting better at the run helps make your swim better, right? They're all related to each other, even though they're three different disciplines. And so the way that I have really crafted out my life is that all these different disciplines in my personal life, professional life, volunteer life, entrepreneurship life, service life in the Army Reserves, they all, to a certain extent, intertwine and make me a more holistic-minded person, right? And so I'm a better Army officer and the lieutenant colonel in the Army Reserves because of what I do at Team Red, White, and Blue. And I'm better at Father Capodanno because of what I've done in the Positivity Project, right? And I'm a better author, you know, because of what I've learned about leadership in all those different organizations, right? And so they're not silos. It's like a soup, right? And they're all in there together, right? And each ingredient actually makes the whole soup better, you know? And I think a lot of people struggle to understand this because, and it is like on some days, like I'm, you know, like we had to reschedule this podcast, right? Because something big comes up and it's like, dude, I have to make this change. And so sometimes it leads me to have to ask for a lot of grace and ask people for, you know, understanding that, hey, I know I'm leading Team Red, White, and Blue and I should be at this event, but I can't because it's my son's first communion and I'm not missing that.
Yep.
Right. I hope you can understand that. Right. Hey, I'm supposed to be teaching my class on Wednesday, but the Army Reserves has me at West Point next week, so I can't be there. Right. And as long as people who I work with understand that about me, right, and don't get frustrated by that, right, then it works out great. Right. When it doesn't work out great, of course, is when people don't seem, and I get why they don't, right? Because if that's not how you live your life, it seems like you look at how I live mine and it feels like wildly chaotic and out of control. It's really not. It's just that sometimes things change and I'm not able to follow through on certain things. And as long as people know that I'm not doing that for my own ego, that I'm doing that because like I've had to reshift the priorities in my life for that day or that moment or that week, those decisions are made for me by the Army Reserves or by whatever, then we're in a good place. And that's why it works for me. It does not work for everybody, but it works for me that way.
Excellent answer. I think we hit everything except for what do you see Team Red, White, and Blue's role in combating veteran suicide?
Yeah. You know, when you look at mental health holistically, there's no panacea, right? There's no like do this or do that. Counseling or therapy is going to save every veteran who is, you know, depressed or has PTSD. They're not, right? First of all, a lot of veterans aren't going to go see a therapist no matter what. Like that's just not what they're going to do, no matter how much we work to reduce the stigma, right? And so when you start to think about how do we reduce veteran suicide, a lot of it does boil down to, from our view at Team Red, White, and Blue, physical activity, which improves mental health. And doing so in community with other people as part of a team gives you a sense of purpose and it gives you those relationships. You really need a lot of these things to help pull someone out of a dark place, right? The hard part is that starting with the reality that they're in a dark place, they may not raise their hand and be like, oh yeah, let me go join Team Red, White, and Blue. So a big piece of this is, again, we're in our world today, we're more quote unquote connected than ever, but ultimately we're not, right? We're not really connected. So my challenge to anyone who knows someone who may be struggling or has sort of fallen off the grid or doesn't know how someone's doing is, you know, to reach out and to be that voice, to be that hand, to be that invitation to come out to something, you know, to a walk or a ruck or a run or, you know, whatever it may be. So that's what we do. Like we take a multifaceted, multi-pronged approach, you know, to improving veteran mental health. And when you improve mental health, especially from people who are struggling, that is the antidote. That is the upstream approach and solution to combating veteran suicide, right? But we do that primarily through physical activity, right? And if you do that with other people, and especially if you do that out in nature, outside for a hike or a run, right? You're getting nature, you're getting other people, you're getting physical activity, you're getting the mental stimulation and the physiological response. All of that stuff that you get together, right, creates the antidote or the barrier to the depression or to the mental health problems that lead you to thinking about even contemplating ending your own life, right? And so again, it's not a super clean, we do therapy, we do this. Like, no, we do a lot of things. And at the end of the day, our protective factor is the community and belonging to the team.
What is the ask we can give to our audience? So, you know, the church, time, talent, treasure, how can people help you at Team Red, White, and Blue?
Lowest hanging fruit, most accessible is join the team. If you haven't joined the team, you go to the App Store, Team RWB, you fill out your profile. We've built out a social network over the past 5 years, right? We're not big tech, right? We're not TikTok or Meta or, you know, Snapchat. Like, we are, you know, a humble digital garrison where veterans can go see like physical challenges going on. They can connect with other people. They can be a part of the team. So number one is join Team RWB by downloading the app, finishing your profile, getting a shirt, a Team RWB shirt, costs like $5 for shipping. You know, we pay for the shirt, getting involved and becoming a part of Team Red, White, and Blue. And then certainly, like, if you're in a company and you have a veteran employee resource group, an ERG, you know, we're working with a lot of veteran ERGs out there today to help them tap into Team Red, White, and Blue to help their veterans be healthier and to be more physically active.
Awesome. Mike, how can people find you?
LinkedIn, X, and Instagram, all those platforms. You can find me, Irwin RWB, Irwin with an E, you know, in LinkedIn. And then, yeah, you can find my books out there, any, you know, anywhere, but primarily Amazon. You know, Lead Yourself First and Leadership is a Relationship. Both of those books are out there. And I'm on a bunch of other podcasts. You know, as you know, like, I've had the honor of joining people over the past 6 years on lots of different podcasts, talking about lots of different things. And we cover different angles in our lives. So there's a bunch out there as well.
Brené Brown, Ryan Holiday, BJ Kramer, kind of all the same category.
That's so right, man. That's right.
Mike,
big dogs.
I can't thank you enough for taking the time. Appreciate all of your insights and thanks for everything that you're doing as an example to all of us out there, but especially for our veterans at Team Red, White, and Blue.
Well, I appreciate it, BJ. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate continuing to amplify the message of what we do and for all that you're doing to keep bringing the positive messages out to the world. Certainly in big need of it right now. So thank you.
Thanks, brother. Hey, everybody. If you're enjoying this show, do us a favor and subscribe to Inspiring People and Places on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast hosting platform. We'd also greatly appreciate if you left us a review and shared this with other entrepreneurial public servants and all your friends and family in the AEC space. Be sure to visit our website, www.mcfaglobal.com. Sign up for our newsletter to stay in touch with us and learn about all of the projects and clients we're helping. Last but not least, we are hiring. We are always hiring. Do us a favor. Take a look at what jobs we have open. Contact us through our website or connect with me on LinkedIn. Until next time, have a great rest of your week and a great weekend.